Hello and welcome to this week's episode on the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're going to build upon a recent article that came out, Why Scientists Lie. An interesting title because we don't actually think the scientists lie. Really, what happens is that the scientists simplify complex concepts like public health, climate change, in ways that are different from the general public. And in simplifying the concepts differently, it appears as though a lie has occurred when it's really a matter of perspective, which formally, according to the behavioral economics from the 1970s, it's called representativeness. The notion that we represent certain beliefs or derive certain thoughts from previous mental models, meaning what we experienced before represents how and why we see what appears before us presently, is essentially a form of bias. Think of it almost like the blocks we form. If you're given 10 random blocks and allowed to arrange them any way you want to, no two people are really going to arrange them in the same way, unless they're, of course, watching each other. Then they'll have an influence on one another. But if you take two completely different strangers in two completely different rooms, ask them to build a set of blocks in however way they so chose, it's likely going to appear different. It's just the probability of it. That's another reason why the power of initial impressions carries so much sway. That initial perception, that initial perspective through which we look at people affects how we look at them subsequently, because that initial perspective comes from how we choose to represent that person from our past experiences. So that's why the blocks matter and the shape of the blocks matter. Think about it in this way. Let's say you had a three-dimensional cylinder. It's just a fancy looking can. If you were to look at it from the top down, it would look like a circle. If you were to take a light and shine it from its side and watch the shadow that forms, it'll look like a rectangle. Now, if you tilt it on an angle or have the light shine at a certain angle, it's going to look different. So the perspective by which we look at the cylinder, the orientation, whether the cylinder is shifted, or, now this is the most important part, if the cylinder is reduced to just two dimensions from its shadow, it looks different. And this is the key here. To take a three-dimensional cylinder and simplify it into two dimensions, we're effectively simplifying three into two. It would appear as a circle in certain angles and a rectangle in certain angles. It would simplify differently. That's because you have multiple dimensions turning into fewer dimensions. It's in a sense simplifying. Think about it in this way. Going back to the block example, if we have all these blocks arranged in a completely random way, and then we were to shine that same light on those blocks, the shadows that form, the silhouette of those blocks, would all look different depending on the arrangement. That's how complex this can get. Just a simple example of the cylinder is complex enough because it forms either a circle or a rectangle. Now, if we were to take an infinite number of blocks, or let's even keep it more simple, 10 blocks, like the original 10 blocks, you would develop different shadows based on how the blocks were arranged. The arrangement, the angle, creates the different forms of simplification. And that's critical to recognize, because when you start to talk about biases in healthcare, you start to see we're taking complex concepts and simplifying them. And in simplifying them, we all simplify them differently depending on the orientation and the perspective. Now, this is a relatively new concept in healthcare, but it has been around in other sociology, philosophy, psychology, other forms of study, particularly when it comes to African American history. Two notable scholars, W.E. Du Bois and Ralph Ellison, came up with this notion that there is a duality of black souls, as W.E. Du Bois puts it. There is a multidimensionality to the African American that in any given experience, an African American would experience it, one as an individual and two as an African American, regardless of the situation. So there's always a unique perspective that the African American has relative to the normal American population, precisely because they're coming from that additional perspective, an additional vantage point. So it creates a difference in perception because there's an added perspective to that dimension. Now, if we were to apply that logic to gender studies and focus on women's rights, we start to see that these added dimensions start to create certain limitations and certain unique vantage points as well. Let's take discrimination against women, sex-based gender discrimination. In a certain sense, it's biologic. Women have certain biological needs, certain biological differences that men, the male sex, do not share. This includes something as simple as going in for an annual or biannual mammogram screening for breast cancer once women reach a certain age. That's something men cannot relate to. Men cannot understand that. And so if a woman has to take time off work to get that screening, it becomes a disadvantage a woman has that a man doesn't necessarily have. Applied that a little bit more broadly across different ages. Annual menstruations, hormone-related complications, all disproportionately affect women more than men when it comes to the medical care that they need and the medical care that they seek over time. That is a biologic limitation that certain women face that is difficult for them to understand if you are not actually going through that. Now, add to that cultural forms of discrimination. In certain countries in the world, women are forced to wear certain clothing. Women are limited in their professional career options, in what they can do on a daily basis throughout their lives. These are cultural-based discriminations. Now, if you were to put that together, each woman has a different combination of biologic limitations and cultural limitations that in aggregate forms a unique complex mix of discrimination that each woman faces. It's, in a sense, the duality of being a woman, the cultural forms of discrimination and the biological forms of discrimination. All of these go together to create discrimination in its total complex form against women. Gender-based discrimination. Now, if we were to simplify that complexity, again, going back to the examples of arranging the blocks or shining the light on the cylinder, we start to realize that how we simplify gender-based discrimination to look at it more in terms of biological terms, more in terms of cultural terms, all depends on our frame of reference and how we simplify. The manner in which we simplify determines which biases we particularly focus on, and as a result, the frame of reference we choose to look at an issue. Now, we wrote, "We fail to see in others what we see in ourselves," meaning our frame of reference, our orientation of the light, makes perfect sense to us, whether we experience it directly or obtain it from a trusted source. But the experience as it's experienced from someone else, for us to then rationalize, becomes exceedingly difficult. And that is essentially representativeness in its most pure form. The inability to see in others what we see in ourselves, the inability to see the mental block, the aggregate mental blocks as they are arranged in others compared to ourselves, forms the representative bias. Now let's bring it back in to healthcare and contextualize it specific for healthcare-based discrimination. Healthcare is similarly, if not more complex than other forms of study. Sex-based gender discrimination, race-based African-American discrimination. Healthcare encompasses all of that, but has an added subtle layer of disease, symptoms, and clinical presentation. And in many ways, the discrimination we see in healthcare is defined not by any one concept, the color of the skin relative to who they are as an individual, the gender relative to the culture that they live in. Instead, it's defined by the interactions in healthcare. So it's not one particular concept that defines healthcare discrimination, but it's the interactions between all the facets of a healthcare experience that define healthcare discrimination. And it may seem like we're just splitting terms here or trying to get a little bit too smart with the wordplay, but it makes sense if you think about it in this example. Two people go to the emergency room. One, African-American male. Two, a Caucasian female. Their initial experience when they are triaged, meaning when they first go to the reception desk, talk to the receptionist, explain their medical conditions, and then go into the back of the ER to wait on a nurse, a physician, a technician, what have you. That initial interaction, combined with the subsequent interaction with, let's say, a medical assistant, and then subsequent to that, the on-call nurse, and subsequent to that, the medical director on-call at the ER at the time. These are 3 to 4 degrees of interactions that in aggregate, produce the different types of experiences for the African-American male and for the Caucasian female. Now, you could say one of the 4 experiences being triaged, medical assistant, nurse, medical director, was based on race-based discrimination, was based on gender-based discrimination. In healthcare, it's not about one particular facet, one particular component. It's about the interactions. So it's about the 4 degrees of interaction that in aggregate produces a different outcome. Let's say the Caucasian female tends to receive the necessary medications within minutes. The African-American male receives the necessary medications within hours. That waiting period, as a result of the aggregate 4 experiences, then determines whether there was discrimination among those 4 degrees of interactions. It's the interaction that defines the experience. And that's critical here. Because when we talk about interactions in healthcare, we're talking about something as simple as a patient-physician encounter. Or something as complex as what the patient is experiencing when he or she is getting prepped for a surgery. The interactions are like the folds in the dimensions. And the folding of the dimensions into simpler two-dimensional or one-dimensional renderings of the underlying complexity in all the interactions in healthcare define the representativeness. And that's a little bit different than what we would see in other forms of discrimination, because in other forms, you're able to point this person's race is the basis of discrimination. This person's gender is the basis of the discrimination. It's harder to do that in healthcare because you have so many more degrees of interaction that can lead to disparities in outcomes. Because that is, after all, the basis by which we measure discrimination. We could say that African-American males experience discrimination in healthcare. But if the outcomes are the same, the quality of care is the same, there's really no basis by which we can then state or quantify there is discrimination. We need the outcomes to prove the discrimination in the first place. But to prove the outcomes, we have to look at the interactions that lead to the outcomes. That's why it's more subtle in healthcare and less defined by any single component and more defined by the interactions. That is also why we have a hard time understanding healthcare discrimination and why up until the pandemic, we really didn't understand how to characterize healthcare discrimination. Some people would say that it exists. Other people say that it's all in our heads. In reality, it's all in the interactions. And that component is essential in understanding how healthcare discrimination can be addressed and how it can be resolved. Until we look at a problem the right way, from the right angle, from the right contour, we're not going to be able to solve it. Just like the pile of blocks or the cylinder. All depends on the angle upon which we shine the light. Unless we're able to look at the problem in the correct manner, look at healthcare-based discrimination through the fundamental interactions and not one single component, we're going to have a hard time trying to address it because we're not even looking at it in the right manner. So what I would encourage all of you to do, as you read the articles, as you listen to the podcast, think about the message that's being conveyed and see how it can apply to your own patient care, to your own healthcare experiences. And then look at how the interactions by what you experience in yourself and what you experience in others helps to define the basis for the discrimination and in aggregate, the basis for the disparity in the healthcare outcomes. That will be the start to understanding how representativeness exists in healthcare. And that will be the start in which we can make meaningful progress in addressing healthcare discrimination. Until next time, guys, take care. Thank you.